Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show. This is Julie Calamine. Maybe everyone thought I was your long-lost morning show host, and I'm here with our regular morning show host, Phil Huff. Good morning, Phil.
Morning, Julie. I was only worried last night when I had to send you a map of how to get to the studio.
How true. I could barely find it. It's hard to find Sandpoint after you've been away for a while. But it is nice to be back and happy to be back. And here we are in the morning show. Yeah. I'll start with a bit of weather. The weather this weekend was pretty nice. And I know that because I was with you, Phil, hiking.
Yeah, we had a great hike on Sunday with the person who's on our show this morning, Liz Thomas, our featured guest. And we'll talk more about her and that in a moment. But
yes,
great weather Sunday. And a good long distance ruck hiker training on Saturday. So it was a fun filled weekend.
True. I heard quite a bit about that. I didn't make it, but I understand it was a great event. And then on Saturday, we had a great Sunday, we had a great hike up Star Peak.
But you had a couple weeks of fishing in Argentina.
Yes, I did, and I enjoyed the fishing so much, but I'm happy to be back in Sandpoint. Fishing in the winter is always fun.
Good.
Well, let's have a quick weather update, because the weather is improving. We're into March now, and weather temperatures are warming, and we're having a mix of snow and rain and sun. And for today, we can plan on a high of around 40 with a chance of snow showers and then a chance of rain and snow. Tonight, it's mostly cloudy, down to 25. Tomorrow, for the skiers and the folks who like to get out and hike, it's going to be partly sunny, 42. What a beautiful day. Then in the evening, a chance of snow. Thursday, we're looking at more rain and snow. Thursday night, same thing, rain likely. Friday, it's going to be a little nicer. And then the weekend sounds beautiful. Sunnier days and warm. So that's something to look forward to for those of us who are working Monday through Friday.
It feels like spring.
It sure does. Yeah. It does to me, too. Well, Phil, why don't you tell us about our morning's guest? She's an exciting one.
Yeah, we're really excited to have Elizabeth Thomas. Liz Thomas, also known as Snorkel, on the show this morning. She's author of Long Trails, Mastering the Art of the Thru Hike, and a winner of the National Outdoor Book Award. Liz is an outdoor writer for Wirecutter, part of the New York Times, a former holder of the women's self-assisted speed record on the 2,181-mile-long Appalachian Trail. Liz is currently vice president of American Long Distance Hiking Association West, and as I mentioned, author of this exciting new book, which recently won a National Outdoor Book Award for the instructional category. You'll hear Liz's trail name occasionally pop up, Snorkel. Welcome to the show, Liz.
Thank you, Phil and Julie. Great to be back on the show.
So start with a little bit of background. How did you get interested in long-distance hiking?
You know, that's a great question, Phil. I didn't grow up being a very outdoorsy person. I was dead last in my fifth grade mile run. But I just loved being
in nature. And as a kid, I would try to spend as much time in nature as possible and go for rambles of whatever length. And by the time I went off to college, I figured, hey, maybe I might want to start hiking more, spending more time in the mountains. And I did, and I kept doing harder and harder mountains and hikes. And next thing I know, I discovered these long trails existed, and I was really curious.
So what was the first one that you fell in love with and walked all the way through?
So the first trail that I walked all the way through was the Tahoe Rim Trail, which is on the shorter end for these long trails. It's about 175 miles all the way around Lake Tahoe in California. And, you know, it was kind of a testing ground to see if I really enjoyed going for a walk that long. And I just felt so grounded. It was a very eye-opening experience. It was hard. My feet hurt. And yet I loved exploring and seeing the world at 3 miles per hour.
And Liz, were you a solo traveler on that hike?
I was a solo traveler, which, you know, I was worried about the bears and my stove broke and all sorts of things went wrong. But I loved it and couldn't wait to do the next one.
So which was the next one?
I hiked the Appalachian Trail next, which is 2,180-ish miles from Georgia to Maine. And I hadn't spent much time on the East Coast at all, certainly not in the nature of the East Coast. So that was a whole new ecosystem for me. It was straight up and down, and that was a new challenge. But I also enjoyed that quite a bit.
Now, was that the one that you set the speed record at the time?
No, that I did hike that trail rather fast, but, you know, 2 weeks in, I set up my shelter incorrectly and ended up in a bathtub full of water, more stove failures. There was still quite a bit of learning process. And when I set the speed record, I had all that dialed in.
And was that a bit more of a social hike? I understand many more people are on the Appalachian Trail these days.
Yeah, it was, I think, you know, when people think of long trails, they think they're going to be alone for 5 months or 6 months, which is can be the case doing maybe something out here. But on the Appalachian Trail or the Pacific Crest Trail, some of these more established trails, it's really a social experience and a great place to meet lifelong friends.
So you've, as all hikers do, you've grown or matured or evolved, however we want to look at it. Your most recent hike's going to look different than your first hikes. You mentioned a couple of the things you've learned from, but it's only an hour-long show, so condense this, but give us your kind of hiking biography, if you will.
Yeah, so from the Appalachian Trail, I went on to hike the Pacific Crest Trail from Mexico to Canada and the Continental Divide Trail from Canada to Mexico, where, incidentally, I met Phil for the first time in the middle of the desert in Wyoming. But I've gone on to hike about 20 different long-distance hikes. Most of them are not as long as those three, which are called the Triple Crown Trails. But I went on to pioneer a 300-mile route around the Columbia River Gorge called the Chinook Trail, and also the first known traverse of the Wasatch Range in Utah, which had their own challenges since no one had ever done them before. A lot of question marks, a lot of, I don't know if this is going to go through. But that was really fun.
Yes. And Liz, over how many years have you been hiking? So many hikes over how many years?
Yeah, this is my 11th season of hiking, and I've been doing at least one long trail, usually a couple long trails every year.
And some of those are more unusual. As I recall, you did a trans-Adirondack hike as well.
I did. I actually have a little bit of that to finish up because I made the really wise choice of going out to upstate New York in April to go do a hike. I didn't really want to go over Avalanche Pass by myself in April. But yeah, some of them, that's what I love about hiking, is it takes me to places that I never would really have gone to before.
And you must have really evolved as a hiker. I'm sure that as your experience increased, your interest in bigger challenges must have increased.
Yes, definitely. You know, I talk a lot in long trails about things that I've learned along the way, things that I've made mistakes about, and how I wish someone had told me these things. And certainly the more that I've hiked, the more every single little tiny detail has become very finessed. And that gives me the mental and physical energy to start taking on bigger challenges, because I've figured out my gear, I've figured out my food, all these little things that are a big challenge when first starting off on a long trail.
And you've turned your attention in recent years to the urban through hike, something that sounds like an oxymoron. And perhaps start with explaining what it is and then tell us about a few of them.
Yeah, so an urban through hike is going and doing a 200, 100-mile, 300-mile trip, continuous footsteps all within the boundaries of a city. And much like a traditional through hike's goal is to walk the entire length of a mountain range or to hit up this national park and this national park, an urban hike will have different goals. Like the first ones that I did went to all of the public stairways, which gave me elevation gain, surprisingly similar to a traditional long hike. Others will focus on art. And so I'm able to experience the world at 3 miles per hour, really process it and appreciate and explore in a city in the same way that I do in the mountains.
And I imagine the training for an urban hike can happen in the urban setting.
Yeah, that was one of the first reasons that I decided to go on urban hikes, is I wanted to be able to get some elevation gain and some mileage in kind of in the off season a little bit.
And the urban hike in Bend focused on beer. We can use that four-letter word.
Yes. So last week I completed about an 80-mile trip over 4 days to all of the breweries in Bend, Oregon.
Is it one per capita?
Oh, it's pretty close.
No, but 80.
It was an 80-mile trip, and I think it was almost 20 breweries.
20 breweries. 4 days.
4 days.
Have you recovered yet? I'm not talking about your legs.
I'm still working on it.
Well, Liz, I'm interested in what you consider to be the most important characteristics for a long-distance hiker. How do you see those?
I think, you know, perseverance is really important. Fitness doesn't always, it's not the most important thing. A lot of people think in order to go do an extraordinary adventure like a long hike, one needs to be in Olympic shape. And that's just, frankly, not the truth. People of all different sizes, shapes, ages go out and hike these long trails. And really the ability to read your own body, know what your own body needs, and to keep at it day after day, wake up and keep going, I think ends up being the most important attribute.
Yeah, perseverance.
That's for sure. And this sort of tags on to the same question, because I think of long distance hiking as maybe a young person's adventure, but not so, right?
Not at all. I would say, especially these days, a lot of people who have recently retired, who have dreamed about hiking these trails their entire life, have finally, the gear is light these days, information is available, and it's a really good time for people who have always dreamed about doing these trips to go out there and do it.
Yeah, I think speaking from some experience here, as a hiker who started somewhat young and is now less somewhat young, when you get older, that perseverance kicks in. You can get more stubborn and just more focused on a successful outcome.
It's true in many sports, isn't it? You may not be as physically fit, but you can hang in there and keep going.
You've found a way to be able to continue. Speaking of keeping going... I think the profile of the through hikers I've met, it's either one and done. They had their grand experience. They've gone home. They've gone back to their other life. And not necessarily, the experience didn't necessarily transform them in that way where they become a long-distance hiking addict. But then others, some of us at least, we have to keep getting our fix. But we can only do it every few years. You've managed to figure out a way of how to do it to incorporate it into your almost routine life.
Yeah, it's taken a long time, but there is something about the long distance hike that really, it's so peaceful to be out there. The mind feels at ease, and that's what I love. So I'd worked for many years as an independent contractor, and that was able to give me the flexibility to plan when my work would be so that I could go on a longer hike. And then I've also done quite a bit of outdoor writing, which has also been a write the thing, get it out, and go back on trail.
Yeah, now moving towards that writing, we're going to talk about some of the actual products, the books, but being able to do that is a good symbiotic relationship with your hiking. Writing for Wirecutter about gear, does that give you the chance to go out and use the gear then?
Yeah, you know, one of the most fun things about my current job with the Wirecutter is being able to test these gears on long, extreme routes and really get an idea of, oh, this starts falling apart after a couple of weeks. Oh, this is great. It's warm and waterproof. So I really enjoy being able to take those real world aspects to my job.
And the Wirecutter contributes to the New York Times.
That's right. We're the New York Times product review site.
That's neat. That's a big site.
Yeah. And, you know, they do a lot of tech, a lot of home appliances. I got my toaster oven based on their recommendation. But it's fun to have an outdoor section as well.
Yeah, and in this day and age, you can literally phone it in from anywhere, right?
Yeah, it's mostly a remote-based company. They clearly have a New York office and an LA office. But that's one of the great things is I'm working from Sandpoint today.
Are you able to write while you're hiking, or do you take notes and then write when you get off the trail?
I take notes and then write when I get off the trail or when I get into a town to get some food and maybe a shower. When I came through here on the Pacific Northwest Trail, I went to the library and wrote an article.
So how did you get first interested in writing?
You know, I had always wanted to be a writer when I was in elementary school. You know, I remember telling my dad in third grade, oh, I want to be a writer. And he said, well, you better enjoy writing for TV and movies because that's the only writing jobs out there these days. And, you know, the internet came along. It made it a lot easier for anyone to be a writer. And I started there, started blogging, and various people started noticing what I was writing for free on the internet. And that's how that kind of snowballed into a career.
How did you first figure out how to bring together your love for long trails and your interest in writing?
I think it was kind of natural. I knew that I enjoyed writing and the long trails. I was so passionate about them that I felt like I had this need to get it out of my system and write it in words, yeah. Share it with others.
Now, you mentioned that we met in 2010 on the Continental Divide Trail, and Deb and I were northbound through Wyoming. We knew you were coming south and looking forward to meeting you because I had been following your blog for the American Hiking Society magazine, and that's a pretty prestigious organization. How did you get connected with AHS at such an early point in your career?
I went to an event called Hike the Hill in Washington, D.C., which is a lobbying event where hikers can go and speak to their representatives. And, you know, it's very hard for the normal person, especially someone who spends a lot of time in the woods and not paying attention to what's happening in D.C., to know exactly which bills are worth talking about to senators and representatives. So that was a really great event, and American Hiking Society holds it. And I told them I'm hiking the Continental Divide Trail, and they said, hey, would you like to write for us?
Wow.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just putting it out there, saying this is what I'm going to do.
That's right place, right time.
And being there and showing up makes a difference. That's right. And you're obviously a woman writer and a woman hiker. And I'm wondering if that has been, if that's a seemingly different experience than, you know, everybody else out there. What is the proportion of male to female on these trails today?
I would say since I started hiking, there's been a lot more women out there. You know, REI had their big Force of Nature push last year. Wild, the book and the movie, really inspired a lot of women to go out and hike the Pacific Crest Trail. So I've seen the numbers go up quite a bit, and that's been really inspiring because, you know, I think these trails are great for everyone who goes out there. Everyone gets something out of it. So, yeah, it's getting better, and there's more gear available for everyone, so it's working out.
And from a writing perspective, there's, I think, been an increase in the women's perspective voice.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have started to be interested in that as well. And certainly my book is not woman-centric at all, but I've seen a lot of women being drawn to it because there isn't another book about long-distance hiking by a major publisher that is by a woman. Mm-hmm.
This is not your first book either.
That's true.
Tell us about the other ones.
So I wrote a book. I worked for the Continental Divide Trail Coalition, which is the trail organization that supports and helps maintain the Continental Divide Trail. And while I was working there, we really wanted to put out a day hiker's guidebook to the Continental Divide because it's a pretty intimidating long route, but it's there for anyone to enjoy. And so this was meant to just give a little taste of what makes that trail so great. And that guidebook was my first book. Phil's photo is actually on the cover of that book of Deb.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful book. It was a lot of fun to write.
Now, to be clear, Deb's on the cover. I just click the shutter. She's way better subject material for a cover.
I would agree. And the Continental Divide Trail doesn't seem to be talked about quite as much as the Pacific Crest Trail, but it's also it's a big hike. That's a big one.
Yeah, that's another Mexico to Canada, and because it goes through the Rockies, it's going through a lot more remote areas. Unlike the Pacific Crest Trail, you're going through known grizzly bear habitat. It's has extra challenges being above tree line for extended periods of time. But I think that's what makes it really great. It's the next adventure.
Yeah, and a good reason for a book on day hikes because not everyone would be able to tackle the entire trail.
And I think in some ways because it's so long, people who tackle it in smaller bits enjoy it more.
Maybe so.
So tell us before we take a break and go into the book proper, tell us a little bit about All the West.
So ALDA West is the American Long Distance Hiking Association West, and our mission is to foster and fellowship and to promote long distance hiking and to support those who are long distance hikers, those who are interested in becoming long distance hikers, and also their family, friends, trail angels, people who support long distance hikers. And so it's been a really great place to meet other people like me, to learn more information about hiking new, and also to share some of the things that I've learned along the way.
And you're the vice president. How long have you been associated with the organization?
So the ALDA West for many years was known and still is the organization that gives out the Triple Crown Award, which is for people who have hiked the entire length of the Appalachian Pacific Crest and Continental Divide Trail. And that I first was associated with them in 2010, right after I got my triple, finished all three of those trails. And I've been vice president for finishing up 4 years this year.
Very good.
And one of the, I think, very significant things that All the West does is the Through Hiking Rucks, the training for would-be through hikers. And we're in the middle of the rucking season here, aren't we?
We are in the middle of the rucking season. So a ruck is meant to be a big educational hands-on component where hikers can ask questions, meet others who have hiked a trail that they're about to hike. And it's not just for first-time long-distance hikers, but certainly they get a lot out of it, as well as do people who have done many trails. And we're going to 5 different states this year between February and end of March, holding events on long distance hiking.
And a couple more coming up. We just had the one here in North Idaho, but you leave now to go to California for the next one.
Yes, we have a California ruck in Kensington outside of the Berkeley Hills on Saturday, and then we have one in Colorado, in Golden, and then in Bellingham, Washington.
And is it every year in North Idaho? It seems like it has been for several years.
Yep. Fourth year, this last one. And I think every intention to hold a fifth at least. So we'll keep going as long as there are people out there who want to come to learn more about hiking.
Well, let's take a quick song break, and then we're going to come back and talk with Liz.
Nobody quite sings it like Walking Jim Stoltz, does he?
I walk the long trails. Yeah.
Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to 88.5 KRFY in Ponderay, listener-supported radio for all of North Idaho. Today, we're here with Liz Thomas, author of Long Trails, Mastering the Art of the Thru Hike, and winner of the National Outdoor Book Award. We've been talking about Liz's pedigree, both writing and hiking. And now we're going to turn a little bit to the book. So, ta-da, tell us about the book. When did it come out?
So, Long Trails, Mastering the Art of Thru Hike came out in April. And this is the first kind of pre-long hiking season that it's been out. It's done in conjunction with Backpacker Magazine and Falcon Guides. And, you know, one of the reasons I really wanted to write this is couple-fold. It really seemed like when I was trying to plan it for my first long-distance hike, there wasn't a book that went kind of from that dream to reality stage. There was... A lot of the books out there were a little wonky. They got very technical quickly. And I wanted someone to walk me through the steps of how do I find the time to do this? How do I tell my family? How do I budget for a trip like this? And a lot of outdoor books is how-to outdoor books will get very into the skills, which are incredibly important. But for a long distance hike, you can't even get on the trail and practice those skills if you're not able to leave your job or find some time off to do it.
Yeah, there's a lot of support that's required, a lot of friends and a lot of help you need.
And I talk a lot about how you can get your friends on board, how you can get your family on board, and make it so that they don't, so they take you back when you're finished with your walk.
Yeah, this is a good book for not just the person doing the hike, but for those who want to know more about what that person's going through, for friends and family who are supporting it to understand better what it's all about.
Yeah, I've been walking these trails for 10 years, and after I gave this book to my family, they read it and said, oh, that's what you've been doing this whole time.
Now, this is a little hard on radio because we don't have the visual support, but this is not a pocket guide that you take with you. This is it's a large book. It's a hefty tome, as they might say, lots of photos, and great for reference at home, but you're not going to carry this out in the field.
Yeah, it was meant to, because so much of it focuses on the planning, the route, setting up your route, saving money, that aspect. A lot of it won't even help you when you're out on the trail. It's meant to really be for inspiration, for getting you to start getting those wheels turning in the head about going out and finding the ideal trail for you.
Yeah. One of the things I really like is you incorporate a lot of voices. It's not just yours. Yours is great, but a lot of different people have contributed to the book.
Yeah, on the back of the book is the phrase, hike your own hike, which is really big in the long distance hiking community. Everyone has a slightly different way of doing their gear and their food and when they start and what type of trail they're hiking. But each one has been able to make a trail work, even though their speeds might be different. So I include probably at least 20 different hikers and their perspectives, people of all ages, backgrounds.
Yes, and I think if anyone's attended a ruck, they learn that and hear about that, all the different ways you can hike a long trail. But I don't know that there's a book out there like this one that explains it so well.
Thank you, Julie. Yeah.
And I also have to compliment you on the quantity and quality of the photographs. They're really lovely and very inspirational.
Yeah, you know, with this book, I really wanted everything from the text and the perspectives that are shared to the photos to be community-driven. So I pushed really hard against my publisher to make sure that those photos that were in there were real photos of dirty, happy hikers in real places on trails. So no stock images for the most part, no models, just real through hikers out there enjoying it.
This is a huge project. How long did it take you to put together?
This was about a year and a half, 2 years in the making.
Wow.
In the subtitle, it's listed The Art of the Three Hike. Of the through hike. Why do you see it as an art?
I think, you know, it's not an exact science. There's a lot of things that are done differently. And I think making it work, it's a balance of many systems. It's a balance of so many different factors, your gear, your nutrition, your physical fitness, your planning, that all kind of work together to make something work.
So walk us through the book. Tell us a little bit about what it covers.
Yeah, so the first introduction is about defining the dream, trying to figure out why you want to go out in the first place. And when trying to put together a long trip, a long endeavor, that's a good question to ask no matter what you're trying to do with your life. And then there's planning, time, and budgeting for a trip, which it seemed like there weren't a lot of books that talked about that, and it's so important. Prepping physical fitness. One of the greatest joys about doing this book was being able to interview people who know a lot more than me. So I was able to interview Heather Anish Anderson, and she has photos and exercises that she works on. And she's not only a personal trainer, but also holds the men's and women's speed record on the Appalachian Trail and the Pacific Crest Trail and the Arizona Trail. So she knows a lot about staying in shape. And same for the budgeting. I was able to interview thru-hikers who are CPAs and financial planners. Then I talk about the long trails. Everyone thinks about the big three, but there's lots of different trails out there, some of different lengths all across the country and the world. So just to give some ideas, if maybe someone had been dead set on one trail because that's the one they'd heard of, oh, that one could work for me too. That one even looks better. Route planning, that one is a little bit trickier to explain, but it has a lot to do with when I'm going to be where and how much food do I need for these sections. Resupplies, that has a lot to do with food and nutrition. So I interviewed a professor dietitian who had specialized in endurance hikers, knew what we needed. Short answer is a lot of fat.
Yeah. During the break, we were talking about this just a little bit, but I think about that a lot. It's got to be hard to maintain nutrition on a trip like that.
Yeah. And, you know, I go through all these ideas. We call them eating rules. But a big problem, too, is not wanting to eat the food that you're carrying or no longer finding it appetizing.
That's a resupply problem as much as a nutrition problem.
Right.
You've mailed yourself a bunch of food you're not hungry for anymore.
Yeah. Or tired of that oatmeal.
And that's happened to some of us.
I'd say that's happened to pretty much everyone at some point or another. And then there's a gear chapter. I think a lot of people, when they go out and know they want to hike a long trail, that's the first thing they think about, gear and food. And those are really important. But I really wanted to get people to start thinking about this broader idea, because so often I've seen people spend months and months and years planning their gear, every gram of weight, or planning their food, their dehydrators going all the time. And they ended up quitting because all the other aspects that make a thru hike possible didn't end up working out.
Yeah, and specifically with the weight, you can focus in on little details that at the end don't matter as much as the big picture strategies if you get those right.
Exactly. I would say the gear chapter in this book is pretty cool because I got five different hikers, everyone who carries different stuff, from the budget guy to the guy who spends his entire paycheck on gear. Got them to line up their gear, worked with Backpacker Magazine to have a professional photographer put a crane over all of the gear laid out, labeled it. So it's really cool to see both how different the gear is, but also how similar the choices are. From there, I focus on life on the trail, which often is really hard to talk about. It's easy to talk about the prep and the gear and the food, but what your day-to-day is going to look like, it's going to be a lot of walking, getting up, walking. It can be tedious. And some of the things that by knowing about it beforehand, you can help manage a little bit better. Safety and etiquette and concerns for people, for women, for older hikers. And then troubleshooting, injury, disease, and first aid. You know, there's certain things that end up happening to hikers. Overuse injuries are one of them. And what can be done to prevent them and what to do when they do happen.
Those are both really good topics. And I think the safety and etiquette almost ought to be required reading before you get a permit to hike some of the trails.
And, you know, you talked about the day-to-day and then, of course, there's the after the trail time too. But I'm wondering, did you ever think about talking to a psychologist? Because you must experience every possible emotion by yourself on a long trail like that. Loneliness, et cetera.
I should have talked to a psychologist. it is, some people say it's an up and down roller coaster of highs and lows. And I find that one of the best things about hiking, to be going through a storm where I'm not sure I'm going to make it because of the lightning, and then to get down low and eat a hot meal and,
Life is good.
And I think being able to understand that something as simple as being out of a storm and somewhat secure is such a joy, makes it so that going back into the real world, you know, I feel feel like I don't take things for granted as much as I did before.
It is a very, in many ways, a simple and determined way to live, and that's the beauty of it. You have a nice section towards the end, I think. We're at the end about savoring the experience.
Yeah. You know, one of the greatest things about hiking these trails is the friends that you meet along the way. And that's something that a lot of other books don't talk about, because there are people on these trails, especially the more popular ones, and some of them end up becoming your lifelong friends. So how do you manage friendships that you make along the trail, as well as balancing your friendships back at home, your family back at home, keeping in touch? And kind of the role of technology on that, which is ever-evolving, but something that we need to talk about in the hiking community, how it can be used to keep in touch with people back at home.
Well, you and Phil have managed it quite nicely. You're here together today.
It's a small community of thru-hikers, and that's a really good point, Julie. And it wasn't unusual to meet like we did, and often the people you meet on the trail, even for the briefest of moments, you share much more in common because of that shared experience than you do with others that you've known for a long time. And that's one of the purposes for All the West and groups like that, to create that fellowship amongst hikers.
Yeah, I'd say that long-distance hikers, we understand each other. It takes a special mentality to want to go out and be in the woods, be dirty, smell bad, be wet and cold, and love every minute of it.
Yeah. So tell us about the National Book Award.
So, yeah, the National Outdoor Book Award. This book won for Best Instructional Book. And you know, I'd seen the National Outdoor Book Award sticker medal on other outdoor books and wondered, how do they do that? And then I got an email out of the blue one day that said, hey, you won for Best Instructional Book. I'm thinking, is this real? I didn't nominate myself. I didn't fill out an application. But it's been really great because I put so much work into this, and I feel like getting that little shiny sticker on the front help show a little bit of all the love, not just from me, but from the entire hiking community that went into this book.
And you really didn't know you were even nominated. It just showed up.
Nobody told me.
That's great.
It's pretty neat.
So Liz, will you share a section, do a little reading for us?
Certainly. So throughout the book, not only do I have my own perspectives and perspectives from experts like the financial planners that I interviewed, but I also include these little blurbs and photos of other hikers who have either a funny anecdote or a way of looking at hiking that's different than mine. So this is by a friend of mine, Dean Krakel. His trail name is Ghost. It's called My Big Food Failure. Dean learned Dean learned to make every resupply different the hard way on his through hike of the Colorado Trail. And resupply is when you go into town and get food, get supplies. So Dean says, I'm a 63-year-old photojournalist, and in 2015, I walked the Colorado Trail from Durango to Denver. When I decided to walk the Colorado Trail, I did a lot of research on food, and I spent the whole winter and spring making my own trail food. I had two dehydrators going, full blast, 24 hours a day, day after day. I made huge batches of energy bars. I bought bulk freeze-dried food and put it into individual Ziplocs. I also made pemmican, the food that I was going to rock the Colorado Trail with. Pemmican is a blend of 50-50 lean beef, or buffalo, of buffalo and fat that some say tastes like a beef-flavored candlestick. It's very lightweight and incredibly calorie-dense, and I thought it would solve my calorie-to-weight conundrum. I made 24 pounds of it. I packed every resupply box with my pemmican. When I got into the field and on the trail, I only ate a pound of pemmican before I was totally sick of it. I had to go into towns to restock my food. As I walked on the trail, my needs and food changed dramatically. Going into town allowed me to buy the food I wanted and the food that I was craving, and it also allowed me to buy as much food as I knew I would need, because by that time in the journey, I knew exactly my daily mileage. The moral of the story, food is about flavor. If it doesn't taste good, you won't eat, and you gotta eat. And if you need any pemmican, I still have a freezer full.
Oh my, that's good.
And I actually saw Dean about a month ago, and he gave me a pound of pemmican.
That's funny.
And I think that reading also illustrates one of the wonderful things about the book. It's not preachy. Here's the how to do it, the way to do it. But, you know, here's some things we can learn from, too, and they're not always the best way. They're the mistakes we make, or the secondary choices we make.
And mentioning Dean's trail name brings us to a question of your trail name. Can you tell us about how yours was?
Certainly. So boarded. In the hiking community, we all take on these different personas, and they're usually funny names. And in many ways, it makes it easier to remember people because there's always a funny story behind it. So my trail name is Snorkel. When I first hiked the Appalachian Trail, I bought a brand new sleeping bag, and it was very expensive. But one of the reasons why I decided to go for it is they told me it would last 10 years. About 500 miles in, I get to a gear store. They sell that same sleeping bag. Theirs is fluffy and warm. Mine is sad and deflated. And I say, "What gives? They said this would last 10 years. And the guy at the outfitter says, "Well, did you get it wet?" And I said, "No, I've been very careful." "Well, do you stick your head in your sleeping bag?" "Yeah, I got to keep my face warm." He said, "Well, you're going to need a snorkel to stick out the top. The moisture from your breath is condensing the down." Which in a moist climate, a humid climate like on the East Coast, on the Appalachian Trail, is a real possibility out west. You know, it usually dries enough that it's not as big of an issue. But I had never thought of that before. And one of the best things about telling my trail name story, especially when I'm hiking on the West Coast, is there's a little lesson involved in it about moisture management, which, you know, gets a little nerdy as far as gear goes. But it's so important to having a good time out there.
No one likes to be damp. It's not fun.
No, it's not. It's not. And again, another great way to learn from things that went awry. Give us a couple tips. If you were to meet walking out of here, and possibly you will, an aspiring thru-hiker says, "I want to know everything." Give them one or two snippets that get them excited.
Get them excited. Well, you know, there are several things that seem very obvious that I try to push many times in the book, which have helped me reframe a lot of the ways that I think about my life on and off trail. And the first one is this term called hanger. When you're hungry, your blood sugar drops. You get angry, and it makes it not only harder for you to make decisions, make safe decisions, read your map and compass right, but also makes it harder for you to interact with other people, whether it's people you meet on the trail or people you meet in town who you're asking to give you some more food. So that's been kind of a guiding compass in my life to make sure that I eat regularly, stay hydrated regularly. The other thing, too, is when things get difficult on trail or in life, stop, think about it. Maybe look at some maps, take a break, maybe set up camp, call the day good, and then head back at it tomorrow morning. Sometimes taking that time, to put everything in perspective makes those difficult decisions a lot easier. And, you know, that's kind of a great metaphor for going for a long distance hike. A lot of people might find themselves at a junction or transition in life where they're done with their career, want something new. And going on a long hike is a really great restart button to, go out there and have that energy and insight to go back and rock life.
There you go.
So you're up here for a few days. You've joined us on a hike on Sunday and the ruck on Saturday, and you're here for a couple of other events, a little book reading and signing here and there. How are they going?
They're going really great. It's been so much fun to talk to people, answer questions about trails, and hear about the hikes that other people are planning on going on. It's getting me excited for the hiking season.
Which leads to the question, is there a hike in your future? Do you have something planned?
You know, I'm toying with a few things. Last year when I hiked the Pacific Northwest Trail up in this area, as we all know, there were quite a few fires and it was very smoky. So there's a few sections that I had to walk roads around the big fires. And I'm hoping this year that I'll be able to go out and walk the actual trail through those areas.
Nice.
That'll be a lot of fun. And so we have one more reading tonight in Coeur d'Alene at the Well-Read Moose. So if you haven't heard Liz, or you're just tuning in now and want to hear more, you can come out this evening to the Well-Read Moose at 6 o'clock and meet the author.
I'm looking forward to it.
That would be neat. And this is just a wonderful book, and I hope that folks will have a chance to either purchase it or come and listen to her reading. Liz, any other writing projects in your future?
Yes, I'm writing a day hiker's guidebook to waterfalls in Southern California, which has been a challenge because it turns out there's not that much water. But it's been fun because, you know, for so long I focused on very long trails and getting people out. And something about waterfalls makes people, even the least likely hikers, go out
and get really excited.
And get very excited. And I love being able to see that perspective.
Yeah, they are enchanting.
There are more of those than there are, say, mountains in Kansas. So that would be a really short book. How can someone go about acquiring your book if they don't find us tonight at the Well-Read Moose or haven't seen you yet?
There's certainly lots of local stores, I believe, that have copies of the book. So I would say talk to your local bookstore. They can get it ordered in. That's probably the best way to do it.
Most local bookstores can.
And hopefully the library here will get a copy as well.
Let's hope so. Liz, high points and low points of long-distance hiking. Can you share that with us before we close out? What have been some of the high points? What's the hardest part?
I think the hardest part for me is crossing rivers. Not my favorite thing to do. Mm. And the best part, it's all really good. Being able to see places that most people can't access, eating mashed potatoes with your friends around. there's so much joy that happens. When you look at the photos in the book, there's this sort of happiness, this exhilaration that is really hard to capture outside of, in normal life. And that sort of exhilaration is what I love.
Yeah. So it sounds like the hard parts are maybe around physical challenges and the really high points are around people.
I would say there's definitely high points around people, but there's also high points about being out there, getting to the top of a pass and being, saying, whoa, this is incredible. Just really being blown away by nature.
Both people and beautiful places.
Well, we'll have to have you back in the studio after your next epic adventure. But it's been wonderful having you this morning, and we're about running out of time. So any last minute closing thoughts?
It's great to be back on the show. Thank you, Phil and Julie. And I hope people will have a chance to check out Long Trails.
Great. If
you've missed any of the interview, you can tune in later or you can go online to KRFY.org and download and listen to the podcast.
That's correct. And for now, we're going to go out with a song break and then be back with some upcoming events coming up. And that was Lady Rider on the TV. This is Julie Calamine, your morning show co-host for the Tuesday morning show. And if you've been listening, you've heard that we've just been talking with Liz Thomas, a long-distance hiker and author of Mastering the Art of the Through Hike and also winner of a National Outdoor Book Award, Long Trails. It was a great interview, and I hope it'll inspire some of us to get out and hike a bit more and maybe consider a longer trail than we would have otherwise. If you're just joining us, this is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. And this is Julie Calamine of The Morning Show. Let's talk about upcoming morning shows for tomorrow, Wednesday, March 7th. I hope you'll join morning show hosts Susie Prez and Chris Bessler. Their guest will be Charlie Worm from the Bonner County Election Office with important information on voter deadlines and the upcoming primary election on May 15th. That'll be tomorrow at 8 at 88.5. And then Thursday morning, I hope you will join morning show hosts, Jack Peterson and Jim Healy. Their guests will be Eric Grace from the Kinnick-Sioux Land Trust with an update on the Pine Street Woods Project. A second interview will be with Diane Dennis from the Special Olympics about their Polar Plunge fundraiser. And again, that will be tomorrow Thursday at 8 a.m. on 88.5 Panhandle Community Radio. And then next week, I hope that you'll be joining us, and that'll be for Phil and me. And on Tuesday at 8 a.m., we're going to be talking with Emily Cleveland from the ICL, Idaho Conservation League, and we're going to be talking about ospreys. That'll be an interesting morning show. And then next Wednesday, on the 13th, join Susie and Chris, and they are going to be kicking off the Local Decision 2018 primary. That'll be a good series beginning next week. And finally, next Thursday, I hope you'll join Jack and Jim Healy, and their guest will be Bonner County Human Rights Task Force spokesperson, Brenda Hammond. She'll be talking about their open grant cycle and upcoming events. Again, these are all at 8 a.m. on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursday mornings, live programming. Now, let's move on to some upcoming events. We have a few minutes left in the hour. So tonight, I hope that if you happen to be a wine drinker, you'll consider attending the Kids Helping Kids fundraiser. That's tonight at the Pondere Winery. It's also at the Fat Pig. They're adjacent. One's a restaurant, one's a winery. And the Sandpoint Strikers are going to be hosting a Kids Helping Kids fundraiser from today, again, 4 p.m. until 8 p.m. That's at the winery, 301 Cedar Street. And 10% of the proceeds will go to the benefit food, the Sandpoint Strikers silent auction benefit for our children. So I hope you'll make it to that. Then on Wednesday night, there's another fundraiser. This is PAFE fundraiser at the IPA. That's Idaho Pour Authority for the beer drinkers. That's at 203 Cedar Street. And they're hosting a Panhandle Alliance for Education fundraiser with Payette Brewing. Beer will be on tap from 4:30 until 7:30. Then on the 7th also, that will be tomorrow night, if you have an instrument to play, a song to sing, a poem to read, or just want to hear some live music, please join Fiddlin' Red and Desiree for a Hootenanny. That's going to be an open mic from 6:30 p.m. until 8:30 p.m. at City Beach Organics. That's at 117 North First Avenue. And you can find them on Facebook for more info or call 208-265-9919. That should be a fun open mic. Hootenanny. Now, the 8th through the 11th, if you're wanting to get out to the movies, you can attend, sit in on The Female Brain. Don't we all? Wouldn't we all like to know more about The Female Brain? That's at the Panada, 300 North First Avenue. They're hosting screenings of the comedy The Female Brain, and showtimes are from 7:30 p.m. March 8th, they'll be at 5:30 p.m. On March 9th, 7:30 p.m., March 10th, 3:30. So you can learn more by going to the Panada website. That one should be a good one. Moving on, we have on the 9th, swim instructor training class, and the registration deadline is the 9th. Registration deadline is fast approaching for the March 16th through 31 session. You can become one of the promoters of water safety and swimming in a 26-hour course. And you'll learn your swim stroke mechanics, water safety awareness, child development, etc. Be a great class, and it's taught by certified instructors, Ciara Benton and Deanna Benton. And for more information on that, you can call 208-263-3613. Must reach them by March 9th. Moving on. At the Music Conservancy of Sandpoint on the 10th Masterclass, and I hope I don't kill this name, but I might, Viatatis Smetona. He's at the Music Conservancy. It's a masterclass. Space is limited. It's an opportunity for aspiring musicians and music lovers to watch an advanced lesson being taught. For more information on that one, call 208-265-4444. And we have time for a couple more announcements and then out with a song. The Zumbathon is on the 10th. That's the 9th annual Zumbathon, 10 a.m. in the Heartwood Center, and it goes until noon. All proceeds and food donations go to the local food bank, so it's a way to have some fun and support your local food bank. For more information on that, you can call Teal. No, you can call 208-290-2600. So that's something to look forward to. Finally, well, two things. Don't miss on the 11th, Yonder Mountain String Band will be playing at the Hive. So that's a great, that would be a great band to have a chance to hear. If you're interested in MIG welding, you can register for that. The class is on the 15th. Just call them. Well, go to Idaho Parks and Recs. Sandpointidaho.gov/parks/recs. So that's a good one. And then finally, please don't miss on the 13th, Friends of Scotchman Peak Wilderness Sip and Shop. And again, that will be at the Pondere Winery, 301 Cedar. 10% of all proceeds will go to Friends of Scotchman Peaks. And that will be happening again on the 13th from 4 to 7. That's about it for this week. I hope you'll all be able to join us for upcoming morning shows, and thank you for listening today. Out with one more walking song. This is Rory Block with Walking Blues. Have a great week, everybody. Working on it.